What do you see on the horizon? Uncertainty or opportunity? Whatever you see, at PGIM, we can help you rise to the challenges of today, providing outlooks on the market with deep global and local expertise. With over 1,400 investment professionals in pursuit of long-term returns, our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Hey there, it's Joe Weisenthal.
And Tracy Alloway.
And we are the co-hosts of the Odd Lots podcast. And we want to tell you about a new podcast here at Bloomberg we're really excited about. Money Stuff, the podcast.
That's right. Friend of the pod, Matt Levine, is teaming up with our other friend and Bloomberg TV host, Katie Greifeld, to bring the Money Stuff newsletter to life. Every Friday, Matt and Katie will dive into all the Wall Street finance and other things that make Matt's newsletter such a hit.
You can listen to Money Stuff the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Odd Lots podcast. I'm Joe Weisenthal.
And I'm Tracy Alloway.
Tracy, you know what I just found out? You know, people have asked me, when did Odd Lots start? And I didn't know the date up until just now.
The exact date?
Yeah.
I know roughly in 2015.
Our first episode, November 6th, 2015. I think I would have said a little bit earlier, but
yeah,
no, that seems right.
Yeah, it was like October.
Yeah, something. Like summer 2015 or something. But we've been doing this, so that's crazy. So it's like 7 years?
More than 7 years.
Wow.
Time flies when you're having fun.
That's a long time. And when we first started, you were in New York.
Yes.
And then you went to?
I went to Abu Dhabi. And I remember sitting on my living room floor on this big oriental carpet with like a Moroccan pouf in front of me and recording Odd Lots episodes at 6 p.m. in the evening. And then I went to Hong Kong.
And then you made your life even, then you
yeah.
made it even more difficult.
And then it
on
was
yourself.
Like 10 or 11 p.m. at night. And I was recording these episodes from an apartment that was mostly made out of cement, which means that the sound just echoed off of the walls, and it was a complete nightmare from an audio perspective.
When in that process did you get your dog?
Oh, that was 2020. So he was a pandemic puppy.
Okay.
And so he would have been making noise in the background yeah. while I was huddled under a blanket. And I used to cut the air conditioner in Hong Kong as well because it was really noisy. So I'd be in a cement apartment under a blanket without any air conditioning. And the humidity is like 100% and it's, you know, 90 degrees out and the puppy is whining behind me. So I'm glad to say that at least from my perspective, the recording options have improved vastly since then.
Yeah, I'm glad you're back. I felt bad by the end, like you having to do these episodes at 10 o'clock.
So wasn't there one that I did at like 3 in the morning one time?
I think
time?
So, but it must have been a really good guest.
Yes, it was all worth
I'm
it.
I'm sure it was worth it.
It was all worth it. And it led us to this moment here where we're reunited in the New York office. We're in a proper recording studio and we get to talk about our first ever episode.
So I think we actually recorded that episode in the exact studio that we're in right now. We've recorded it in a few different places, but I think it was literally in this room.
Right. So for this festive holiday season, we are re-releasing our first ever episode. Our guest for that episode was Tom Keen, who is our colleague over here at Bloomberg News. You might recognize him from Bloomberg Television. He hosts the Surveillance Morning Show. And when you listen to it, you might notice that a few things are different.
A few different here and there. You know, we probably sound a little bit different. We also we didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know what Odd Lots was going to be. I mean, I still don't know what it is, but we definitely didn't know at the time. And so it was one of these things where we're like, well, podcasts seem fun. A lot of people are listening to them. And, you know, before we joined Bloomberg, like Tom Keen, sort of this legendary figure mm-hmm. at the company, sort of like someone that many of us idolize, or I certainly did, and his interview style and his intelligence and just the sort of like general flair and aesthetic of Tom Keen, for those who know him, a very distinctive figure. So it's like, got to talk to Tom.
You said distinctive figure. For those who don't know, Tom is like, what, 6'7"
yeah,
or something?
So. He wears a bow tie.
He's big. He wears a bow tie. I think he used to play hockey. And he just kind of strides the corridors of Bloomberg's office, throwing out one-liners like, yeah. slope matters.
And if you get him going, he's really into talking about musical instruments. Like
yes.
His banjo, some guitar strings that he bought off a guy who lives in Europe that he's always wanted, amps. He could talk about anything.
Yeah. So I think this is one of the reasons why we had him on. He was sort of our like initial test subject, just to see what it would be like recording a podcast. But we also wanted to talk about things with him. So I think on this episode, we spoke about music, as you just mentioned. We talked about Matt Winkler, who was sort of one of the founding fathers of Bloomberg News. We talked about bow ties and his wardrobe.
I think we talked about how his mom, Tom's mom, taught him how to make stock charts.
Oh, yes, very important. This is where the whole slope matters thing comes from. So there's, you know, it was one of our first interviews, but it's also very, very, so it's interesting to listen to just from that perspective to see how far we've come. But it's also with Tom Keene, who's an interesting guy, and we should listen to it again.
I am really excited that we are digging this one from the vaults, both because I'm still such a big fan of Tom, and also to sort of take stock of the last 7 years, how far we've come, figured out this format, and, you know, one day in the year, I guess, 2029, we'll be listening to this episode, and we're like, wow, we've come along. Hopefully, we've come a long way since then.
Our production values have improved immensely.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, without further ado, here is the rerun of our very first Odd Lots episode featuring Bloomberg's Tom Keene. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of Odd Lots. I'm Joe Weisenthal, co-host of What Do You Miss and editor at Bloomberg Markets.
And I'm Tracy Alloway, executive editor of Bloomberg Markets.
Here at Odd Lots, we want to have a discussion every week about economics, finance, markets, market structure, which Tracy loves, maybe some politics and culture thrown in, stuff that doesn't necessarily fit into the normal day-to-day conversation. And we couldn't think of any guest better to have than Tom Keene.
Am I a guinea pig?
You're the guinea pig.
Okay, thank you.
Tom Keene, as everyone should know, is the host of Bloomberg Surveillance on TV and radio here at Bloomberg. He knows more about markets and economics and world events than just about anyone else in the room. He has a very eclectic background in music and mathematics. And I wanted to have Tom Keene on the show because Tom is always interviewing people, but he's never answering questions. He's never behind the microphone.
I try to avoid it like the plague. Seriously. Well,
so we're going to break.
I'm not doing this for you, Joe. I'm doing this for Tracy.
Well, okay. Everybody knows that. But who are you, Tom? Why are you here? How did you get to be Tom Keene, who everybody knows and loves?
I get it a lot. And what I would suggest is it's one part short-term stuff, one part long-term stuff, and one part blind luck. The long-term thing is being acutely aware when I was a kid and evermore every day knowing how twisted the early years were. I felt something like a bad Stan Freberg record. And you don't know who Stan Freberg is. He was a great comedian. He just died this year. And then recently, it was about the privilege of running into Matt Winkler. And basically, Matt and I, with the support of Al Mayers, who runs Bloomberg Media, and Ted Fine, who runs TV, they're the ones that made all this happen.
Matt Winkler, for our listeners who don't know, is the guy who founded Bloomberg News, essentially. So you got lucky. You met Matt Winkler.
He just hired me because of the bow tie. But to make a long story short, you get lucky. And I met Matt, and we basically invented what you see. Mm. That's a safe statement.
What were you doing before then? Because when I think of you, I think you project this aura of someone who's been doing radio for decades.
Yeah.
But what were you doing before you did radio and TV?
Well, before the media thing, I was in the investment business, but there's a whole sidecar thing in music and in entertainment. For example, and I gauge it off my oldest child's age, I used to hold him in my arms and do the stock report in Boston. And this is the vanilla days, not cross asset. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 42 points today, 842, blah, blah, blah. You know that. And so I did a little bit of investment stuff back then, but a lot of it was just the music business as well, which is the showbiz aspect, which a lot of people in business media try to ignore every day. And they're wrong. I mean, the FT's pink. It's pink for a reason. It's pink. It's like what you did. I mean, you invented the modern headline in modern business journalism. So it's just, you know that Weisenthal wrote that headliner. You just know that.
on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
How has your investment experience informed your career, though?
Oh, huge. Oh, huge. It's a massive type two in that you learn so much enjoying losing money. It's for those of you Gaussian, it's log normal. You learn way more on the downside than the upside.
Lots of fat tail risk.
There's fat tail risk, but it's not that that's overemphasized. It's the joy of losing money within the fat tails, which
what
is.
What do you mean? Why joy? Played. I mean, I think that's probably counterintuitive.
You learn factors more losing money than making money. Factors more. But I can tell you that the way I learned to lose money was enjoying losing money in the options market.
And then, so when you're doing the show, whether on radio or TV, how do you apply that? The fact that you learned so much more when you lost money, when you think about
it's a humility thing.
Show.
It's a humility thing of knowing every day how dumb you are, and trying to always work at getting smarter, laughing at your mistakes. There's less now after the financial crisis, but there's lots of people strutting around with a certain intellectual arrogance about economics, finance, investment. And right now, nobody has arrogance in international relations.
Did you have to learn how much you don't know? Like, was there a point earlier in your career where you thought you knew it all, and then over time?
Yeah, well, it's Mark Twain, you know, certitude of 21. Yeah, you learn from a wide set of mistakes and cycles, which gives you a humility which forces you to get smarter. For example, I went to a wedding this weekend, and half the wedding was from Uruguay. I know nothing about Montevideo, except one of my kids' friends all went down there because they couldn't get a job in America. And I read 7 articles this weekend on Uruguay just to begin to... I have no clue about Uruguay. There's that kind of madness, but compounded over time.
I know nothing about Uruguay. I know nothing about Montevideo. It's a great humble brag because you slide in how easily you knew the capital, though.
I have to ask, you talk about certitude on Wall Street.
Yeah.
And in addition to having a musical background, you also have a mathematical background.
Right.
And it seems like one of the areas in markets where people start to get really certain and have that certain mathematical swagger is when it comes to models. And you love talking about models.
Right.
How does your experience in mathematics feed into that?
Yeah, the background there was growing up with it. I have the clearest memories of getting up on my tiptoes and looking over my father's desk as he did a very sophisticated triple integration of space satellites. And I would literally play on the floor with the French curves. This is a million years ago. And like think Sputnik and IGY and all that. And all of that became a mathiness, which culminated in Max Peters' fabulous program at the University of Colorado. Max Peters was a highly decorated Italian infantryman up the spine of Italy in World War II. And he went out to Colorado and put together the mother of all grinds in engineering academics. And I was extremely fortunate to parachute into that for a couple years. So you take, you know, what I get in math and what I don't get. Trust me, there's a lot I don't get. And then you overlay that into some of the certitude of quantitative finance, and you get a massive humility. I think the math overlay is A, it's a massive type one, you've got it. Mm. But what it really is, and I see it every day and it's getting worse, it's a little better in the last couple of years, is the math phobia within economics, finance, investments. Just stunning. It's just breathtaking how bad it is.
That's interesting. So you see rampant math phobia because other people have argued that it's just the opposite, that economics and finance have become too mathy to the point where people can't explain in clear English what they're talking about. Do you see it the other way?
Well, let me parse that debate. You're absolutely right, Joe. The basic idea is there was an era, particularly coming out of World War II, of math, too much math, math anxiety, et cetera, et cetera. And then at the undergraduate level, not at the PhD, not at the doctor track level, the graduate level, but at the undergraduate level, a vast majority of people don't have the dynamics in their head to do even basic Marshallian microeconomics or, you know, name the flavor of macro you want to do. The British are very different than the French. They have much better, as a rule of thumb, undergraduate mathematics than we do. If I talk to British students, their knowledge of first-order difference equations, off the chart. Honors undergraduate programs in the U.S., some of them have no clue what that is.
I'm pleased to say I've forgotten almost all the mathematics I learned at but university and college. However, I want to know, so when you see something like the events of August, when the market sold off and a lot of people were talking about mathematical formulas and model-based equations and risk parity at the center of that sell-off, what do you think?
I think some of it was extremely valid this time around. I think that the model fatigue is much more in the macro area. Mm. The work Olivier Blanchard did at the IMF with Joe Stiglitz and others is really important to ask the non-sophisticated and the very sophisticated differential equation models that pro-PhDs use, and I don't pretend to be fluent in them, they're very suspect after what we went through in August of 07.
Stepping back, so you have this interest and lifelong interest in mathematics, in music, which I also want to get to. But then when did it click that markets and investments were
way
what
back,
you were interested
earliest
in?
Earliest memories. It was permeating in my house. My grandfather knew A.W. Cohen, the point and figure guy. Mm. He did point and figure charts. My mother did point and figure charts.
Wow, so
X's
you come from a family
I
background
totally,
of technical analysis.
Totally permeating
wow.
investment theory. And investment analysis, you know, just original Graham Dodd and Cottle up on
and
before
so
Cottle.
In addition to everything else you were always interested in, you always knew that this was something you wanted to
No, I had no
in.
Idea
oh, you didn't
I wanted
know
to do it. It just was there.
It was just there.
It was just there kind of thing.
I don't think a lot of people know about your musical background, but why don't you give us the 60 to 90 second version of Tom Keene's musical
career.
The 90
second version is real simple. At 8 years old, I walked into a place called Stutzman's, which is legendary in the acoustic music business, with my father. There were 6 Gretsch White Falcons lined up.
And where did you grow up?
Rochester, New York, with Kodak. And my father bought me a $42 acoustic guitar. And then I just began grinding away. And there were 3 or 4 iterations of it. But to make a long story short, I ended up doing the New England singer-songwriter thing, juggling a bunch of other stuff. There's a place in Nashville called the Bluebird Cafe, which is magical.
Did you say the Bluebird Cafe?
The Bluebird Cafe. You know, it was just the New England folk scene. It was sort of, you know, in terms of artists around it, it was post-Tracy Chapman. Suzanne Vega was really happening with Luca and Solitude Standing. And then a whole host of people came on, really jump-started by a guy named David Wilcox, who did an album called Eye of the Hurricane for A&M Records, which there was like this mini folk boom. And what was so cool, we knew this is before the internet. That's a key statement. Even we had no idea what was coming in digital, but we knew how lucky we were to do it when we were doing it. Mm. We knew it couldn't last.
What was the greatest guitar you've ever owned?
The one I got now. The greatest guitar, my concert Gibson J100, which was picked out by Eric Schoenberg up in Boston. was stolen and I got it back 4 years ago. I told Dave Drummond at Google, I got it off Google Images.
Wow.
There was my guitar in Google Images. But that, and I've got some others now, but I think that's, you know, I guess the best one's the one my father had, but that's been lost.
So with your very, very idiosyncratic background in mathematics.
It's almost like Joe Weisenthal's life.
And music. And investment. When you do your show today at Bloomberg and you look around the world, what do you see as the most important story going on right now?
I think the number one story is one of my kids said to me, Daddy, when does this get to be fun? And I think there's a massive understanding by people of a certain vintage that the kids don't have. They have lots of wonderful digital stuff and medical stuff, et cetera, et cetera. But the optimism has been shattered. And the answer, Jeff Immelt, I was with 2 years ago, I'm guessing, and he said, look, all we need is 3.2% GDP. And that solves a lot of problems. That's a very smart comment by the applied mathematician from Dartmouth. We don't have that. The younger people, people under about 32 have never known normal.
So when you look at the world, you don't necessarily see problems of inequality. You see generational problems.
No, I think they're both there. But I think in 2015, that the generational issues are less spoken, which to an extent speaks of the anger in the politics today.
When do you think it was normal, or when was it fun?
Was, well, you know, you stand on the floor of the Republican convention, X conventions ago, and you go, well, this is surreal. Or the Democrat, it doesn't matter which party. But the answer is, we are programmed for a certain nominal and real GDP. That ain't happened. There's a quarter here, a quarter there. Macroeconomic Advisors right now has third quarter at 1.5%. The next quarter is a little bit better. But we have not had the run rate of GDP that provides base psychological comfort to a lot of people, whether it's overeducated twerps like my kids or, you know, people really struggling. Millions of Americans.
Do you think, I mean, I remember thinking in 2010 and 2011 when we had the raging debt ceiling debate, and I think that was the first time that we saw this huge, I would say, the crisis in the economy seeming to really spill over into politics, and we had this stark division, the Tea Party and leadership. But it hasn't faded as much as I would have guessed, given how far unemployment has dropped. I mean,
100% correct.
The economy is much better than it was in 2011, but we still have, I mean, look at Donald Trump and leading in the polls.
Right.
You have rise of more radical politicians everywhere. Do you think it's something beyond economics? It has to do with the media environment, the internet?
Yeah, it has to do with the media, and it has to do with speed of transfer, you know, Twitter and all that. I mean, the Cyprus crisis alone with Twitter was surreal. That Saturday morning when Cyprus blew up, how the Twitter dialogue changed the discussion. But what is underemphasized from a Newtonian mechanics standpoint is inertial force and the word chronic. And the answer is you're totally right about 10 and 11. And what's different now is it may not be force majeure like it was then, but there's just this chronic weight of gridlock in Washington, this chronic sense of GDP underperforming, even while unemployment supposedly gets better. And that goes back to productivity. You know, we could bore everybody with three ratio productivity analysis.
Did you say three ratio productivity analysis?
Yeah, productivity in the media is appallingly reported. There's capital, there's labor, and there's a separate ratio wrapped around something called total factor productivity, or TFP. And the pros know all that. And they sort of just, you know, when we talk about productivity, gloss over it. But the answer is labor ain't happening, and certainly for a part of America. This Angus Deaton winning the Nobel Prize is a big deal. Big, big deal. This is the death of aggregation, of summing everything together. And that's a really big deal. We talked to Schiller today. I didn't have a chance to talk about it.
Well, that brings us to, again, to your show. When you go out and talk to people, what makes them good interviews, and who are the best interviewees that you think you've had?
It's a chemistry. It's a mixture. And there's always exceptions. There's hyper-academic people that fail. And that I do think it's a chemistry. We keep very careful track of who we like and who we don't like. And I would say the third rail is we don't want people that are scripted or consulted. Mm. That was the rage 2, 3, 5 years ago. There's less of that now. We have less and less people on talking points, which is where a consultant comes in and tells them 4 things to say. That's gone away. But mostly, it's a media phrase, pop. They've got to have pop, particularly in radio, is critical.
Bonds are back. And so is All the Credit, PGIM Fixed Income's monthly podcast series. From the latest trends to long-term perspectives, you'll get timely fixed income insights from leading economists, research analysts, and investment professionals. Whether you're new to bonds or a seasoned investor, tune in to All the Credit wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is intended solely for professional investor use. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
So we talked about the sort of big generational issues that you see as the main thing. What about this moment specifically when you look at financial markets? What are the big things that you're watching? Yeah. We're going to get into prediction season soon for 2016.
Right.
What do you have your eye on? What are the charts that you look at first thing in the morning?
Well, my chart of the year is inflation adjusted commodities back 60, 70 years. I've shown it on TV probably 10 times. You can steal. It's a great chart. Great chart.
And what does it look like?
It looks like a persistent decline in commodity prices over many years, and then there's a China aberration, and we are, off the top of my head, 2/3 to 3/4 of our way back to normal, which is long-term commodity deflation.
So you don't think the long-term, it's not over yet? If we're going to return to normal,
then I would suggest not that it's not over. I'm not going to make a prediction.
Right.
I would say the people predicting it is over are on tenuous ground.
That's Tom's media experience coming through there, refusing to make a prediction.
Do you think one thing I feel is like everyone's talking about deflation and central banks around the world failing to hit their policies and how are they going to reflate? They can't do it. And then you see these conversations, the Phillips curve, this idea that the employment and the inflation rate are inversely related and how that's dead and broken. Do you think we could be getting to an extreme in the other direction where everyone is just thrown in the towel on any sort of inflation coming back and anything like that? And
no, to get wonky on you, within a classic ISLM matrix, John Hicks, 39, and Krugman's written about this beautifully. What I would suggest is there's a total underestimation of real economy effects. Everybody's over in the bank. What's Yellen going to do? What's Carney going to do? Which is fine. I mean, that's what keeps us employed, all three of us. But the real economy effects have been grossly underrated from day one of the crisis, August of 07. And the other thing I would suggest is the interest rate transmission between the real economy and the bank side of things, the LM curve, is totally broken at the zero bound. And there's things we don't understand that are going on in the interest rate sphere right now that there's a mystery here.
I can't believe we've gotten this far in the segment without talking about your bow ties and the fact that the bow tie was almost entirely responsible for bringing you to Bloomberg, since Mr. Matt Winkler also enjoys wearing bow ties.
It was a rumor. Right. I found a picture of my grandfather, my mother's father, 5 years ago holding me, and he had a bow tie on. I have no recollection of my grandfather having a bow tie. It started when I was sort of like pre-med, and I was in emergency rooms, and they wouldn't let you wear a normal tie because they're afraid the patient will grab you with a regular tie. So I was forced to wear a bow tie. Doing what was called extern. This is a million years ago. This is before anesthesia. And, you know, it sort of started with that.
I'm assuming back then they weren't Hermes ties, though, as they are
now. No, they were not. No, they weren't. We did the clip-on thing minimally, I must admit. That was like, no, nah, I don't want to do that.
Do you have a favorite tie? Does it mean something?
No, not really. This one's actually very old. This is like one of the original...
It's an orange tie for those Bloomberg listening.
Ties.
Thank you very much for joining us. That was a phenomenal discussion. I learned a lot about you. And
well, podcasts are really cool. You know, we did them years ago. And I totally agree with the new enthusiasm over podcasts.
Thank you for being our guinea pig, Tom.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us on the first episode of Odd Lots. We'll be doing this every week, and you can find it on Bloomberg.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, and just about anywhere else. You can follow us on Twitter at the Stalwart for me, at Tracy Alloway for Tracy. We'll obviously be tweeting out the links. And thanks again to Tom Keene for joining us and being our guinea pig on this first episode, and thank you for listening. Hey there, it's Joe Weisenthal.
And Tracy Alloway.
And we are the co-hosts of the Odd Lots podcast. And we want to tell you about a new podcast here at Bloomberg we're really excited about. Money Stuff, the podcast.
That's right. Friend of the pod, Matt Levine, is teaming up with our other friend and Bloomberg TV host, Katie Greifeld, to bring the Money Stuff newsletter to life. Every Friday, Matt and Katie will dive into all the Wall Street finance and other things that make Matt's newsletter such a hit.
You can listen to Money Stuff the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.